I tend to ignore you when you do stupid shit.
Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome back to Drugs and Stuff. I'm Scott McNally, and of course, with me is Dave Crossland. Our programming is presented to you by TrueNutrition.com, GetAzoth.com, and we have a new affiliate, which is Supplement Needs, and you can use our code ADVICES to get 10% off of their stuff. We'll be talking more about them in the future. We're reaching the UK market here, Dave. Dave Crossland, we've got a bunch of stuff here for the program. We have some listener questions. We have an update on Proviron with TRT. I have some British slang that I want to run by you. We used to do this segment where we learned a British word of the day, an English word of the day. I want to bring that back. And to start us out today, we have drugs in the news.
Da-da-da-da.
Yes, the music is there. So here's the deal. it turns out there was a study, and I sent this to you just before we started the program. The study title is Theory of Mind in Users of Anabolic Androgenic Steroids. And as it turned out, the results say that there is a one-third chance that using anabolic steroids will increase psychopathy. And that's how you say the word. Does that surprise you at all? Psychopathy. I got it right.
Not at all. This is a continuation of the work that Astrid has been doing out of the University of Oslo, I believe.
Okay.
She's done quite a lot over the last 5 years on long-term brain studies and the impacts of recreational steroid use on brains.
Okay.
And cognitive function and anxiety and emotional control and anger and all the stuff, you know, that we now start to realize is quite major side effects mentally from the steroid use. So it doesn't surprise me at all. It is just, I suppose, another confirmation that, you know, there are behavioral patterns that occur through steroid use because of its impact in the brain. I think we've talked about this or touched on this before, that, you know, the old stereotype of a steroid user being aggressive and emotionally a bit retarded and mentally a bit retarded and not being the brightest button in the box.
Yeah.
And obviously there are plenty of very intelligent people that use steroids and that train, and some very successful people that do so as well.
Present company excluded.
Obviously, we're both thick as fuck. But Astrid's work,
good old Astrid,
has shown quite a huge impact in brain function and thinning of the cerebellum. And it in a way, sort of says that old stereotype to some extent is true.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I definitely have seen an increase in foggy moments and impacts in my ability to concentrate or my ability to retain information as my usage life has progressed. Definitely.
Okay. Well, let me break down a little bit of what this study says. So she says human social behavior is the result of numerous interacting factors. Among these are social hormones, oxytocin, and testosterone. Whereas oxytocin, aka the love hormone in popularized jargon, is involved in affiliative behavior, bonding, and care, testosterone has often been linked to aggression. The complete picture, however, is less straightforward. Although both hormones influence human social behavior, the effects depend on the situation. Oxytocin can also present antisocial effects if antisocial or anti-society provides benefits for offspring. Testosterone has been proposed to drive motivation for seeking and maintaining social status, and not for aggression per se. Okay, so interestingly, single dose administration of testosterone has been shown to lead to the suppression of facial mimicry, reduced ability to infer the emotions and intentions of others, and to reduced trust. When competing for social status, There may be clear disadvantages to trusting, caring, and empathizing with a rival. The reduced social cognition seen in these studies may therefore be beneficial for an individual in a situation like that, whereas it's not going to be necessarily advantageous for getting along in society. You know, basically what they're seeing is that overall here, let me go back to this. Okay. One third of users develop a dependency syndrome now, which is characterized by elevated rates of psychopathy, cognitive impairments, and aggression and antisocial behaviors. But they say the mechanisms behind this and these problems are not known. So one third of users will have elevated rates of psychopathy. What do you think of that, Dave?
I think you only need to look at Facebook and how users have reacted to lockdown to see that that's nothing that's surprising at all.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. I mean, I think what people do need to realize, this isn't saying that because you're a steroid user, you suddenly become a very aggressive antisocial individual.
Yeah.
It's talking about simple, low-level, mild behaviors. It's not talking about people running out and killing people or just locking themselves in a room and having nothing to do with people. But
right.
It is talking about social interactions and how people interact and the subtleness of those interactions and how users become somewhat numb to the interactions from others. So it talks about how as a user you become almost less empathic to
yes.
people around you.
Yes.
And how you can become more easily frustrated when things go out of whack or out of the norm, and how you don't cope with change as well, and how you don't cope with social interaction with people you don't know as well, and you can be more standoffish and your body language changes and all these sort of things. So it's more about the subtleties rather than someone going nuts, grabbing a baseball bat and beating the neighbors half to death.
Yeah.
You know, and don't read into it with these terminologies that's what this is suggesting. It's not. But when you watch Facebook, and particularly if you have interactions with people, so you know these people are users. You might not know them as friends, but you know they're users. If you follow them, as particularly if there's someone who just starts using or starts getting serious about usage, you can see in writing, in black and white in front of you, their social interactions change by their posts.
I think it's easier to see too when you have been through that yourself,
because you recognize trends and patterns. If you're honest enough to look back at yourself, and hindsight's a beautiful thing, you know, and as long as you've got the ability to be honest with yourself and your own self-analytical behavior. But then when you look at, I've tracked a few people. I'm not going to say more than that because I don't want to embarrass them or realize that I'm such an avid stalker. But and I've watched how their social interactions have changed dramatically with the introduction of cycling, and then those cyclings getting more severe, more long-term and heavier in dose. And you see insecurities and you see them grow, and you see body image issues grow, and you see responses change to challenges, social challenges, when people may question something they say or have a different opinion.
Yeah.
And you see someone who may have originally been quite mellow and quite laid back, and you know, everyone's entitled to opinion sort of approach, to suddenly getting very boom. Whoa, hang on a minute, what are you talking about? Yeah, it's nothing that surprises me, but I do like the fact that it is a study that's actually doing something that's got a bit of meat to it for a change.
And listen, too, so just that part, there's a lot more to the study. There is so much that we could probably talk about this for an hour, which you guys don't want to hear. So we're just kind of skimming through it. But that initial piece that I mentioned about, you know, the less empathy, not being able to recognize others' emotions as much. All of that, they said, was after a single dose. They go on to talk about like repeated administration for, you know, for bodybuilding purposes, which goes up into the super physiological levels. Imagine that, though. That was just on one dose. I wonder how many people, including myself, can actually recognize those changes. You know, I had been off cycle for since 2017, and having gone back on, which is a mild cycle, but I can sense some subtle differences in myself, in my behavior, in how I approach situations, good and bad. You know, I can see it, but I wonder if I can see it in its completeness, because like you said, some of this is so small. You know, being able to that what was that phrase, the facial mimicry, that's being what we do is so I looked this up to read into it more. Facial mimicry is that when we meet somebody, our faces subconsciously begin to mimic what the faces they're making. And it's a way of empathizing and connecting to someone. It's not something we even know that we do, but that went down after a single dose, which is interesting.
Here's a prime example. I smile at you. What do? You smile back.
I give you this.
Well, you do, because you abuse me because you're a drug-toting nasty man that's taking loads of steroids and become very aggressive. But no, I mean, you know, when you meet people, they smile and you immediately feel yourself smiling back.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
the normal natural reaction. But what you'll see is my wife says I'm terrible for it. I have what she calls resting bitch face.
Ooh.
Which basically someone will smile at me and I'll just look at them.
Huh. We should get your wife on the show and to talk about you one day.
She'll fucking destroy me.
But the things just, Dave does.
I don't replicate it. You know what I mean? I can do it in a social standpoint where, you know, walking down the street, you know someone's being polite, but that isn't natural. That's a forced recognition and reaction because I know I have to be sociable because I live in a little village and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But if I'm in my natural thought state, if someone smiles at me, I'll just look straight through them.
Yeah.
And it's not that I'm trying to be a twat. It's not that I'm trying to be an arsehole. It's just I don't.
You have psychopathy, a high level of it.
I just don't empathize to someone smiling. It's like, that's. I'm glad you're happy, but I'm not fucking me, Bill. I'm not the person I was 20 years ago, without a doubt. Emotionally, mentally, we won't even bother getting into physically because that's just a nightmare. But emotionally and mentally, I am definitely not the person I was 20 years ago. I have numbed. Yeah. Emotionally, I have numbed. My range of emotion has shortened dramatically.
Hmm.
Or noticeably, would I say. Dramatically is probably a bit too strong, but noticeably.
One other thing I'll point out that I thought was interesting was she's comparing this in juxtaposition to oxytocin, saying that they're almost kind of like opposite ends of this spectrum. I hadn't really thought about that, the yin to the yang, as far as, you know, empathizing versus not being able to. So I don't know.
She did mention early on as well, though, that oxytocin has created negative behavior when there is, because obviously oxytocin, let's put it in the simple terms as the love hormone. When someone desires love or affection, they can actually get quite aggressive towards others if they feel they challenge their ability to get that emotion.
Or here's the way I interpreted it, because it said like you could create antisocial behaviors if it was to help with producing offspring. So my thought is like, you guys all hang out with all your friends on a Friday night, and now you're like, no, let's just stay home and watch some Netflix tonight, you know?
or you start slagging the competition off because you don't want her to be interested in them, and you want to put yourself in a promotional position.
Yes.
I mean, obviously, none of these interactions are down to a single hormone doing a single thing. These are all very complex interactions that overlay with each other in different ways, and it makes a big pea soup of a hormonal concoction that triggers certain behaviors.
Yeah.
So we are doing it a misjustice in a way to try and single it down to single hormone reactions. But no, she's done quite a lot of stuff as Astrid, and I found all of it incredibly good and very interesting. And it's nice to see a researcher that's not taking some money and just repeating the usual garbage that we all know and see all the time.
We know you
it's nice to see someone at the front end driving forward into research of what these drugs can do. And I look forward to seeing where she goes in the next 5 to 10 years with the studies that she's into. Yeah. I mean, some of the studies, I think she did one that was about a 5-year-long study of steroid use.
Nice, nice.
And the brain function of the users. But she's done some good stuff. Definitely worth looking up. If anyone's interested, it's Oslo University, and her name is Astrid Bjørnbekk, I believe.
All right. And just to kind of, her conclusion was that reduced social cognition may be one contributing factor of the elevated rates of antisocial behavior reported in this population of steroid users. So just keep it in mind, guys. You know, we always talk about the anecdotal stuff related to, like, you know, getting like roid rage and stuff like that. But hey, here's a study that talks a little bit about it. That said, Dave, you have an update for us on Proviron. We had a question on the previous episode. You did your due diligence. Basically, what this listener was asking was, what about working Proviron into your TRT long term? You know, we always hear that it's prescribed in Europe for erectile issues and stuff like that. What did you come up with?
It's provided in Europe as a single treatment for erectile issues. Oh. So it's used as an alternative to testosterone, not generally as with.
I see.
Private clinics do tend to be a little bit more liberal with the prescription of it. What I find long term, there isn't really any negativity with Proviron in the fact that it's not particularly liver toxic or stressful to the body or anything of that nature. It is a DHT, effectively. It is an androgen, effectively, though a very, very mild one. It binds with SHBG, which is also obviously increases free test, and it also binds with aromatase, so it reduces estrogen levels to some degree.
Yeah.
So it, as a result of that, if you're on a, what's the best word to use? Minimal TRT dose, then you'll probably find Proviron quite impacting.
Okay.
And you'll probably find that you feel significantly better with it. If you're on a higher dose, chances are you're not going to find or feel it to be as impacting.
Yeah.
And because it does add to the overall androgenicity of what you're doing and virilization and stuff like that, it can potentially be the straw that breaks the camel's back in the way it tips the levels a little bit too high.
Yeah.
Probably the only downside you really want to be wary of is hair loss.
I could see that. And it's basically DHT, right?
Yes. And again, this only seems to be prominent when you use it alongside a higher dose.
Okay.
So someone who's low dose, you know, sort of 50, 80, 100 milligram of TRT a week, is probably going to see quite a bit of benefit from this. Someone who's a TRT patient at 200 mg, you're probably not going to get much from it. In fact, it might even just add to issues.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it has its place. It is a useful product, but a lot depends on where you're dosing your testosterone in the first place as to how effective or impacting it's going to be for you.
That makes sense. That makes sense. And I do think that hair loss thing could be definitely a big factor. There's nothing you can really do to block that either because, you know, a 5-AR blocker would just stop the conversion of test to DHT. This is just straight DHT, so there's no conversion block.
Because you're talking about using Proviron with testosterone, obviously it will reduce the DHT element of the testosterone you're currently using. So a 5-HR inhibitor like finasteride, durastride or whatever would obviously lower total DHT levels, but it's not going to impact the DHT that's coming from Proviron itself.
Yeah.
For females, it can virilize, so be wary of that one.
Sure.
It was very popular back in the 90s. I don't think anyone ran a cycle without putting Proviron in.
Is that before the AIs were? Because that's what I've heard, was that it was more popular before AIs had become popular.
AIs were around. We didn't really know them. But the main driving factor, having lived through that usage at that period of time, The main driving factor behind it was it increased free test. That was what was the motivation, not so much its anti-estrogen properties.
Okay.
Even though that was an added benefit, which also added to the fact that you looked better and felt better, we all assumed that we looked better and felt better because we had more free tests, not because we'd actually lowered the estrogen that was watering us out.
Right. All right. We've got one here from Andy Sass. He puts this in the live feed. Is there any truth to a test base? He also added, by test base, I mean test no ester, being good for site enhancement.
This is scientifically or chemically or pharmacokinetically, however you want to describe it, there is a mild increase in the androgen concentration in the tissue you inject into. That will be pronounced slightly further by using a base because there is no ester, so you are pumping straight testosterone into that tissue. So those receptors in that immediate tissue are going to get flooded very, very quickly. Obviously, it then gets absorbed into the bloodstream and will move on its way. I remember our test base is about 4 hours half-life or 2 hours half-life. So it's not around for very long anyway.
Okay.
There is also argument in site injecting in general, and particularly base, that because the site injection is quite painful and usually results in some swelling, localized swelling, the mind muscle connection and the isolation of that muscle when you then go to train it is much greater because your brain will focus where the pain is. The pain is in the muscle you're trying to hit, the target muscle. So overall, it gets better stimulus.
Sure, better more inflammation, more, yeah.
And more targeted training. So for argument's sake, say you sighted base in your chest and then you went to bench
Yeah.
because your pecs are in pain because they're swollen from the base injection. Your brain's going to focus where the pain is, so more of the load that you're bench pressing is going to focus on the pec, and less is going to go into the delts and the shoulders.
Yeah.
So there's that element to it as well. So pharmacokinetically, yes, there is a slightly higher concentration with citing, and this will be increased using base, but I suspect that there's more to do with the significant post-injection pain that allows isolation of that muscle when you train it to be much more efficient. The idea that the swelling creates fascia stretching and all that bollocks is just that bollocks.
I'm with you.
Unless you are one of these very rare people that are super, super sensitive and as a result get very big swellings, then you could argue that some fascia release, but for 99% of the people, that's just not going to happen. And anyone that swelled to that degree when they took an injection would probably be going to the doctor saying, "Oh, the fuck have I done? It's gone all big and puffy."
Yeah, and let's talk like real world, Dave. For somebody who say is less than a national level competitor, is there any would you is this something that you would suggest? Even at, we'll even say a national level guy. I mean, is there going to be a benefit to using this, really?
There may be a slight benefit in the sense of, 4 6 weeks out, running into a comp, lagging body part, trying to just get it as full and as you can for the day on stage. There may be a mild benefit there. One thing I have noticed anecdotally is sighting seems to work very, very well with single joint small muscles.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem to work very well with large joint compound muscles. And mainly, I think it's just because you can't get the level across the whole muscle to be even. So what I've noticed is people that sight arms or sight delts generally have strong body parts.
Yeah.
Whereas if you sight quads or glutes, because they're such large muscles, you don't get the same.
Like full roundness, you're more likely to get like an uneven, lumpy look. But let's even reel it back even one step further. Just test no ester or test suspension. Is this something that you would even suggest?
For most people, no. If I was going to run a compound that I was looking for some site enhancement, I'd look at Eseclin.
Okay.
Or Nolitol would be the modern version of Eseclin.
Okay.
I wouldn't be looking at a base for several reasons, but one of the reasons is obviously base can be painful as Oog.
Yeah. Hey, what's up, guys? I'm going to talk a little bit about our sponsors, and then we will get right back to the program. So hope you guys are doing good. Hope you hope you're reaching your goals. Hope your gym's open. I'm reaching my goals. So, you know, a big part of this is the training. In fact, I think that's a big, big factor. And then the nutrition and a little gear, not much. We'll say like a smidgen of gear. And supplements, which, you know, that's like kind of like the final factor there, right? And in part, I kind of put that in with food too. And of course, I'm using supplements from our sponsor, TrueNutrition.com. You know, high quality, third party tested, meaning you get what they say that you're getting. And they're owned by a guy, one of the most honest people in our industry, and smart dudes too, Dante Trudell. So you're getting good quality supplements, you know, and on top of that, if these are things that you would buy anyway, if you get them from TrueNutrition.com and you use our code, which is advices, then you directly support our programming. I'm honestly, you know, at home putting in hours a day, every day on these podcasts, and I love doing it. You know, it's a lot of fun, but obviously it, I got to get some sort of return, right? To continue doing this. So I appreciate you guys supporting our programming by shopping with our great sponsors, because that allows me to keep doing this. And I appreciate you guys listening too. It's a lot of fun doing these shows and sharing all this stuff with you. Our other sponsor is getazoth.com, and we have a code for them too. Advices10. You can go to either that website, or you can go to the Amazon link in our show notes. Basically, some of the coolest nootropics that are out there on the market right now. Azoth 2.0. It's a fantastic product. I've enjoyed that for like 2 years now. And now I'm experimenting with Total Focus, which contains new supplement. It's winning all sorts of supplement awards, Zynamite. So Zynamite, as you guys probably heard me talk about, is a dopamine reuptake inhibitor, meaning it keeps more dopamine in your body. And dopamine is a book I'm checking out. It's called The Molecule of More. It's about like, you know, dopamine is what makes you desire. Dopamine is what makes you want to achieve. Dopamine is what makes you want to like keep making money or keep doing whatever you're doing and be the best at it. Keeps you on task, really. Keeps you focused on the chase. And it's interesting to experiment with that. You can strategically, you know, increase your dopamine where you need it to be, when you want it to be, and kind of get like a performance enhancing edge. Like I'm performance enhancing my podcasting and my nutrition work with my clients. And then, you know, I make sure that I'm not taking it at other times, like when I want to sleep, for instance. But yeah, so I'm having a lot of fun with that. If you guys want to check out some cool nootropics, you can do so using our code at our sponsor. That's advices10 at getazoth.com. Thanks for listening to me talk about all this stuff, guys. And thank you. I mean that from the bottom of my heart. Thank you for listening to our shows. All right. Let's see. So we have another one here. Injectable super draw. Whew. Would injectable super draw be better to pin sub-Q or intramuscular? Since sub-Q slows release a little, wouldn't it be better to make it able to pin only once a day? If yes or no, what's your guys' recommendation protocols on injectable super draw? Also, what's the best site for sub-Q? I've heard mixed things about it being better to pin in a fattier site versus less adipose tissue.
Last time I looked at sub-Q versus intramuscular for testosterone, most of the studies showed there was virtually no difference.
Yeah.
So I would assume it will be the same for Superdrol. Why you would want to go to all the hassle of using injectable Superdrol, I'm not sure. It seems to be an odd one. It almost seems to be taking something for the sake of taking it sort of thing. I mean, it has some unique properties of Superdrol. There's no denying that. But if you don't tolerate the oral version very well, I would have just sort of left it alone rather than seek out injectable. Regard citing, in the real world, I think it makes fuck all difference, is my honest opinion.
Yeah.
The only way I like sub-Q is that it's less painful on sites, less scar tissue, and in general, just an easier administration of a compound. But it's only really viable if you're injecting small amounts.
True. Yeah. Yeah. Because my experience with I used injectable dianabol, and I liked the effect. I thought it was great. In fact, I would say that milligram for milligram, it had a stronger effect and it had less effect on my appetite. But
because it's more bioavailable.
Yeah. Sure.
Going through all this.
Yeah. And it just, it felt cleaner, I guess would be the way I'd put it. But if I used it sub Q, I got some really terrible welts. You know, it was, it was not a fun one.
No. And that's one of the big issues is, you know, IV injection is really limited to the volume of fluid you can pull.
Sub Q.
Yeah.
You said IV.
Sub Q. What did I?
On this episode, Dave talks about IV injecting D-ball.
Yeah.
Coming up next.
Serious shit.
Don't do
no,
it.
No, I don't see. This sounds to be, we get this a lot, over technical.
Yeah, yeah.
Overthought for no real world benefit apart from the fact that you feel you're doing something super technical, so therefore it must be really beneficial.
Well, after you've run a bunch of cycles and you've tried everything there is to try, then you start asking yourself, this is at least the way my brain worked, then you start asking yourself, well, like, what else is there? Oh, well, there's an injectable version of this. I wonder if that would do something better, something different. You know, you start looking for new stuff. And then I ask people, like, well, why? I bet you his answer, if we asked him, why does he want to do this? I bet he's just curious. He just wants to know. There's, because what else? Well, what other reason is there? You know,
he's not going to do much harm. I mean, like you said, he may get a bit of a welt from a putting too much volume in a sub Q, but I don't really see there going to be much change at all.
Yeah,
less painful sub Q, definitely.
Yeah, or more depending if he gets the welts. You know.
Well, yeah, but you're not going to get a big muscular lump, are you, or post injection pain in the same way intramuscularly as you are with sub Q? So it's like
I got
sub Q is rather intramuscular.
I went into like the love handle fat. And I got some nasty, like, pockets, basically, that just swelled up. The whole skin turned red. It was not fun. I found that if I used only a little tiny bit, you know, then I could get away with it. But when I went up, because it was mixed in EO, I just feel like everything about that was, like, just caustic. And trying to go sub-Q with it was just it was a nightmare, man. It was bad. It was bad, bad news.
I don't understand what's wrong with IM. Just, we've done IM for 30 years. Why do you suddenly need to reinvent the wheel?
Yeah. 30 years? Is that all we've been doing injections for, Dave?
You know what? It is.
What? We started doing injections in...
No, I meant me.
Oh, you.
It's 30 years.
30 years. We should, like, drugs and stuff celebration. Anniversary of the first day Dave took steroids.
Yeah.
All right.
I haven't taken steroids for 30 years, but I did start 30 years ago.
Okay. Let me see what else we have here. Oh, I got a little side question that came up on the YouTube. Somebody was impressed by how high your test levels were doing 50 milligrams a day or a week of test.
50 milligrams twice a week.
Oh, 100. Twice a week.
Yeah.
We understood that as 50 milligrams a week.
No, 50 milligrams twice a week, double shot.
Okay.
I've reduced it down to 30 milligrams now twice a week.
Whew, okay, okay. Okay, that answers the question because he didn't know how you achieved that your blood levels. That makes a lot more sense. We were all leveled by that. All right.
No, my apologies. That obviously got mixed in translation. This is the problem you see when I speak English and you speak Americanese, is that things get lost in translation.
We do have a segment later today that's going to help all of us learn a little bit more English today. But before we get to that, let's see. So we had a question here. Quick question. I'm about done with week 3 of 20 on this massing cycle. And my macros are already 320. I'm going to guess that's the protein. 750 on the carbs. And then 90 on the fat. I'm already starting to dread meal times. Any suggestions? I'm kind of worried how much food I'll be consuming by the end of this massing phase.
I'm a bit confused by that. So who's dictating his food? Why is he running those numbers at this point? I need a bit more context.
Okay, well, let's say he's determined it himself, and he feels that this is what he needs to grow, and this is how he's put it together.
He may not need to increase his food at all. He might continue to grow on that level depending on how high above maintenance he currently is.
Okay.
I mean, I've always been in the belief that when you start a growth phase, a massing phase, bulking, whatever you want to fucking call it, that say your maintenance is 2,500, you go up to 2,800 or 3,000 and you stay there until weight increments start to reduce.
Yeah.
Or you see that you're getting leaner and then you increase the calories again and you do it step by step like that. Rather than going, right, I'm on 2,500, I'm going to go up to 5,000 at the start of my cycle, because you'll just kill your appetite. So it's much better to take baby steps and lots of them as you incrementally increase your calories throughout your cycle than it is to go, I've just finished dieting, I've been cutting off 1,500, now I'm going to start my bulk and I'm going straight to 5,000. That's ridiculous.
For sure, for sure.
Yeah, you know, it's just absolutely ridiculous. And all you're going to end up doing is, you'll feel great for the first week, you'll feel pretty good and full for the second week, by about the third or fourth week, you'll start tanking.
Yeah, yeah.
Might take a little bit longer, but you're going to start to tank. Your appetite will start to tank and you'll start to feel full and bloated and just blah. And then you'll suddenly start to see fat gain. Where if you build it steadily and maintain consistency in that progress, you should maintain your appetite for much longer. If he's struggling with appetite and those numbers are needed, then it may be a case of looking at your food sources, looking at how good your digestive health is, adding a bit of cardio to increase. I mean, come on. We all know that 30 minutes of a brisk walk is not going to burn huge amounts of calories.
Yeah.
But what it will do is definitely increase your appetite and make you hungrier and make you want to eat again. So things like that. Get the food down a bit more. I mean, you can start and look at stuff like MK677 if you really want, or other compounds that would help increase your appetite. But a lot can be done with diet manipulation and food type manipulation and just making sure you have a good gut health.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you completely. I feel like that I remember people who have, clients of mine that are in their contest prep. They've got 3 weeks left to go. And then they're dreaming about that. At that point, you know, they start dreaming about what they're going to do with their off season and all the food they're going to be eating. And I have some people that are really focused, you know, that really want to make their goals happen. And then I'll get a message from them and it'll be like, hey, this is what I'm thinking about doing for my off season. Is this a good diet? And it'll be like carb stacked here and carb stacked there and this and this and this and intra and post. And it's like, well, hold on. Post contest, what we're going to do is, we're going to eat the diet you have been eating and we're going to add some food to it, you know, not a lot, but we're going to add some, depending on the person. Of course, some people could handle a good amount out the gate. Other people are going to need to taper it up slowly, but what do we want to do? Just like if I'm going to diet someone down, we don't necessarily start with this like really crazy diet. We just start by trying to get the next 2 pounds. That's all you need to do. Get the next 2 pounds. And over time, that's going to evolve. Or maybe it won't. Maybe you clean it up, you know, and you just keep losing fat all the way through. Just like maybe this guy keeps growing all the way through. I guess that's possible, huh?
It is, but you don't want to be making big changes. You know, we all dream of those cheat meals and those things, but it's just ridiculous. I don't know how he's come to those numbers, so it's very difficult to say where he's coming from. But, I mean, what's he at there? He's going to be, what, 4,000 or 5,000 calories a day?
It's a good amount of food considering he's 3 weeks in to this massing phase.
It's going to be close to 5,000 cows, and without knowing how big he is or anything more about him, it's difficult to say if that's necessary or not. Yeah. I mean, if he is a typical hard gainer with a very physical or a high calorie expenditure during the day and the stereotypical shit appetite, then he might literally just have to look at drinking calories in. And you know, using stuff like intra drinks to sneak them in when you're sort of not expecting them almost. I mean, you know, right? You can get 1,000 grams of carbs in through a workout that you would not be able to consume in any other way, and it won't impact the rest of your diet. But you know, there's things like that you can do, but without more information, it's a bit difficult to really see where he's going or where he's come from.
Okay. Up next, we had a question about DNP. He says, I know DNP is a bit taboo. Does DNP affect any lab values, blood work values? Don't hear anything on the impact on health after usage. He says he's currently using 120 milligrams of test per week and wanted to use DNP that he has on hand to drop some fat, but he doesn't want to impact his HDL levels from recovering.
I'm a bit curious as to why. Of all the fat burners out there, DNP probably has the most potential for damage. It's a weird compound. I've actually never seen a set of bloods pre-post with DNP, so as a sole, ingredient. So I honestly don't know how impacting they are on cholesterol values and stuff like that. I don't know if it's even been looked at. I'd be very interested if anyone has bloods pre and post DNP use to have a look at them.
That would be interesting to see. I haven't seen that either. Usually, when I've seen it, people don't want to see their labs. They're in the middle of, really pushing. So.
I mean, we know DNP has an impact on mitochondria. We know it does some cellular damage, that all that sort of pre thing. But how or if that shows in any way in labs, I don't know.
Well, I know one thing we can say for sure is that when you're gonna release all sorts of free radicals, just
Oh, yes.
ripping down the fat like that, it's not going to do anything that's going to benefit your health. That's for sure.
No,
Will it
no.
have a negative impact on your cholesterol? I don't know. He did say he'll get some lab work done and see, let us know.
I could see it having issues or changes in triglyceride values.
Absolutely, I could.
Blood fat content, I can see changing. So I could see there being a mechanism towards where it would in some way interrupt cholesterol values. But at the end of the day, I don't think it's going to be anything that's actually going to be a permanent change in cholesterol values. I think it's going to be just something that's a change in cholesterol values whilst using.
Yeah, I could see that.
More so, but yeah, Scott might be a better, sorry, Dr. Scott might be a better person to ask.
All
He
right.
probably has a lot more on that than me.
Hi, mate. Oh, by the way, did you notice, Dave, when you texted me earlier? Guys, Dave messaged me earlier on WhatsApp, and he was like, "Hey, can we do a half hour later?" And I said, "Sure thing, mate." Did you even notice that I said mate? You probably didn't.
I tend to ignore you when you do stupid shit.
Did you even notice that, or did you just like think I was speaking your language?
That's more of an Australian. We will say we don't. Well, we do use it, but we tend to
You
use it
do?
more in the third. Yeah, but more in the third person.
Like my mate?
Yeah, so more when we're discussing the person rather than direct to the person.
Okay.
I think it's more of an Australian thing when you actually refer to, all right, mate. It's
Okay.
more that, where we're like, yeah, my mate Bob. And I don't think I call any of my friends mate to the faces, but I refer to them as mates to anyone else I'm talking to about them.
All right.
Obviously, most of my conversations about you start with that wanker of a mate of mine.
Yeah. Listening to the podcast all the time, great. Well, thank you. Currently looking for advice or info on setting up a training split for longevity as I approach 40. Let's see. So as I read so many things and just looking to see if I should follow full body split 3 times a week, or is DC style a bad idea for joints, even at higher rep ranges, etc. So I'm going to say right out the gate, because I asked him for a little more information, which I haven't heard back from him. This is a message he sent me last week on Instagram. I'm going to go out on a limb and say he probably doesn't have a lot of training experience. He probably knows about DC because he's been listening to our programs. But let's assume that he's just a guy who's looking to get into better shape and he has limited gym experience.
I would say what's more important as you age is control and form. I don't think body part split is that important, but it's all relative to you, your lifestyle, your recovery, and how you train. So DC, because of DC's maximal effort approach on that one set, as you get older, particularly if you're less experienced, well, even more so if you're less experienced, it's probably not a training style you want to be starting to get into.
Yeah, I'm going to assume that he's pretty inexperienced. So I think we can just say DC's off the table, because I don't think he could bring the intensity it would take. You know,
if you've had 20 years of heavy lifting, then you might still be able to perform at a DC level as you get in older life. But most tend to find that they need to back down on the weights a little bit as they get older. They just don't recover as fast, even with anabolics. And joints tend to take a pounding a little bit more easily the older and heavier you lift. But regard split, there's nothing wrong with a roll over three times a week. There's nothing with a three-way split, a four-way split. It's more down to what exercises you pick, how you perform the exercises, and what level of intensity you train at, versus how good your recovery is because of external factors like work, nutrition, sleep, stress, and those things. If you have an incredibly stressful job that requires long hours staring at screens and such like, chances are something that's a heavy base workout probably won't be that beneficial to you, and you'd be better looking at a more higher volume, lower weight, higher rep approach, because the central nervous stresses are just going to compound hugely. If you have a very physical job, even at 40, then you're going to be looking at more higher intensity, heavier volume, lower, because your recovery is going to be severely compromised, and you might only train 3 days a week. So it all depends on all the external factors. They don't change as you get older. It's just that certain aspects of those factors become more important and become more of a priority.
Yeah.
Whereas when you're younger, you can get by on 5-6 hours sleep a night, bang a bit of testing, fucking eat a shit diet, train like a lunatic, work all day, and still recover. When you're 40, you've got to start prioritizing where your energy is going, because you can't cope with it all anymore.
Yeah, yeah, those are all good points. I like... I've always found I really like John Meadows' style of training as a general approach. Mountain dog training, as it's referred to, if he's not familiar. And John has a really cool YouTube where he can help people figure out exercises. And basically, if you go back to the principles of it, he's usually training, you know, one body part or so a day. And what he does is he picks an exercise to first kind of warm the muscle up. Then his second exercise would be more like the meat and potatoes, the heavy lift, the muscle builder. And then the third exercise is going to probably focus on a stretch, and it's going to focus on volumizing. So, yeah, but I think that that's a good general approach. I think that's going to be kind of safe, and, you know, and that you can push to grow muscle. But I'm with you, man. I don't think that here's what I'll say too. I feel like the split is a lot less important than I used to think it was. I think that the importance is how you perform the exercises.
Very much so. Very much so. And it's form becomes more and more important as you age, because those little tweaks and pulls that when you were 20, you came around to that body part again and it was a piece of piss. It wasn't a problem. When you get the wrong side of 40, and particularly when you start getting the wrong side of 50, that little tweak will last 2 months.
Yeah.
So it becomes ultra important that you control the movement you're doing and you perform. It's not to say that you can't train hard and you can't train to failure, but you must do it under control.
Yeah.
You just won't weather the storms like you would when you were 20. Oh, God, I used to tweak tendons every bloody week, and it'd be the next time it was brand new, it was fine.
Right, right.
You know, I can break a hip going down off one step these days.
All right. Well, this brings us to a segment of the show that has been long overdue to be brought back, Dave. I don't have a name for this yet. What should we call it? It used to be called Word of the Day.
Well, we learning to speak British like what I does with Dave and Scott.
So, yeah, we had a segment before where we would pick a word of the day, and then I would try to use that word in a sentence while we did the show. I've brought up my 100 British slang words and expressions. By the way, guys, if you have a British slang word that you want on the show, then leave us a comment and we will use your slang word on the next episode. How does that sound? I just got this interactive. Toodlepip?
That's a goodbye, but no one really uses that. That's Mary Poppins fucking shite. If someone's saying toodlepip, they're taking the piss.
How would you say it, like, in a sentence?
Well, it's not really a sentence, so you're leaving, so you just go toodlepip.
Okay, this sounds like something you would say. Taking the biscuit.
Taking a piss.
Well, what does that mean? Going to the bathroom?
No, taking the mickey, making fun.
Taking the mickey?
Taking a biscuit is more taking advantage of.
Oh, okay. Let's see. If you are taking the biscuit when you are starting to push your luck.
Yeah, you're taking advantage of a situation or a person or someone's good nature where it is. The other phrase that's exactly the same is taking the piss.
Can you... I see. How about... let's see what else we have.
But taking a piss is a bit more of a broad spectrum, because we're taking the piss. You can take the piss out of somebody, i.e. you can make fun of them.
Yeah.
Or you can be taking the piss because you're taking advantage of me. So the taking a piss can be used in quite a few different scenarios.
How about yonks?
Oh, that's... I don't... That's some southern softy, posh southern bullshit twat crap. Don't even be talking to me about that. I'm a fucking northerner.
Ooh, this just got racist, I think.
No, regionalist.
So a general term, yonks, a general term for a long period of time, i.e. we haven't visited there in yonks.
Right, okay, sorry, yes. Not really used much anymore, but yes, that is correct. Sorry, I was thinking more preppy sort of speak, but no. Yeah, it's not something you really hear anymore, to be honest.
Let's see. Porkies?
Lies.
Porkies. Yeah, Spreading lies.
Not the famous films that we all grew up on as teenagers and provided very much of masturbation material. No, but telling fibs.
Okay, so can you use that in a sentence?
Oh, yeah, because it's the derivative of rhyming slang. So Cockney rhyming slang is porky pies. So you're telling lies. You're telling porky pies.
Oh.
And it's been shortened to porkies. So okay. It would be, you know, like, are you telling me porkies?
Yeah. Oh, on your bike.
Yeah, piss off.
Yeah, I wouldn't think that. On your bike. Go away.
Leaving short, sharp, jerky motions.
A not so polite way of telling someone to go away.
Yes.
Huh. All right.
Well, to be honest, in the comparisons of fuck off, you twat, I would say that's very polite, to be quite honest.
Yeah, yeah. Okay.
But it's a derogatory comment as opposed to a complimentary comment.
Okay. I have one more here for you. This says originating in the north of England, British slang terms could be, this word has entered the mainstream to mean nothing, and it's spelled N-O-W-T.
Nout. It's a Yorkshire word.
Nout.
Silly lad.
What?
Silly. A Yorkshireman's motto. I'm gonna get it right. Never do out for now, and if you ever do out for now, always do it for this end.
Okay, we're going to need some translation. We're going to need subtitles on this, I think.
Right, okay. So out is anything, and it's spelled O-O-W-T. So never do out, never do anything for nout. Never do anything for nothing.
Nothing.
So if you do something for nothing, always do it for the scent. Always do it for yourself.
What's the last word? Scent?
The scent.
I don't know. The scent. Oh, wow. It's like a whole other language.
You'll find that all the strong regional dialects, so like Scottish, Geordie, Scouse, Yorkshire, their dialects are so strong that it is almost like another language, yes.
Huh, okay. Well, we learned something, guys. So seriously, I want to hear some more British slang. Send me something good. Let's try to stump Dave even. I don't know. I'm sure you know it all, but
No, I don't. I mean, it was what like your yonks one. I didn't get that until you actually explained it, because it's just not really used anymore.
I mean, some of these things we use them, like not my cup of tea. I get that, or plastered. I get that. But yeah, send us something good, guys. And on that note, that's all we've got for you today. Our programming is, of course, brought to you by Dave Crossland here. Go and check him out at crosslands.org.uk. Hit us up on social media. And of course, check out our sponsors, truenutrition.com, getazoth.com, and now new affiliate with Supplement Needs. And you can use our code ADVICES for 10% discount there. So with that said, Dave, on your bike.